today, a significant year of breakthroughs. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to this post covering finance and property news. And early in December, I'm joined by Robbie Barwick from the Citizens Party. Hi, Robbie. Good to have you back.
Hi, Martin. How are you?
Yeah, pretty good. And it's worth us catching up because there's been a lot going on over the year. It's been building and building and building. And actually, I think it came to a bit of a head last week in the Senate hearings, which, although they were focused on regional branch closures, really touched on so many of the issues that we've been pushing against for a long, long time. And I have to say that more and more people are getting the idea, the momentum is building, and frankly, the existing philosophies and approaches are being questioned, which is great.
For sure. From the standpoint of what we do, me and the Citizens Party, it was very significant for us last week because we got to appear for the first time before a Senate hearing, and we've necessarily had to do a lot of things behind the scenes, Martin. And what I mean by that is the politicians talk to us all the time because they know we represent a current in the population that's getting louder and more effectively forceful in getting our views across. But they like to keep it behind the scenes. Whereas this year we've had such an effective role in pushing this inquiry into bank branch closures, and they had the ninth and final hearing of the year on Friday in Canberra, the 1st of December. It's been so effective. The politicians have had to acknowledge that who made it happen. And of course, you know, you and I were there when the sausage was, when the ingredients were being read out for the sausage, right, let alone being made. And they know, the politicians know that. And so for the first time, I can tell you something now. It's almost a boast, I suppose, but our party is a party that the other parties tend to fear. They like to keep us, behind the scenes, don't give us much oxygen, et cetera. But we broke through that. And now we got to have a place at a Senate hearing. We got invited just by dint of the work that we put in for the year. And so we got to have our say. And, of course, our say is what a version of what you and I have been talking about all year and more in the context of this, which is, hang on, there's a solution here. Let's have it. Let's cut through the politics as usual, and let's actually get a solution up. And I think the time is right for that message to be heard, right? And that's why it was even able to be given in the context of this hearing. So that was good, and there were some excellent other contributions, especially during the morning, from the Licensed Post Office Group, from Dale Webster, from Emma Dawson, from Per Capita, from the Small Business Ombudsman, from the Council of Small Business Organisations of Australia, from organisations representing Indigenous Australians, etc. It's a very powerful testimony, and it stood in contrast with the government departments and regulators.
Just on that, the regulators, I mean, they were all up there, you know, in two blocks, right? So, but everybody was saying, well, it's not my issue to regulate this. It's nothing to do with me. Everyone was sort of saying somebody else, right? It really showed the stupidity that we've actually got within the current structures, and the RBA and the Treasury were no better. It was in such sharp contrast to the really penetrating testimony, which, by the way, I've put up as a few separate shows, and I'll do some more, because I think it's worth actually making sure that people see the detail, right, rather than just the summary. But it's astonishing, the chalk and cheese difference between, you know, the Treasury and the RBA and the regulators and how they don't see what's going on versus reality on the ground. For me, this really brought into sharp, sharp contrast what we've been saying for a long, long time, that actually ordinary Australians and ordinary businesses, whether they're in the bush or whether they're actually in, you know, closer to the main centres, are being done a major disservice by the banks. And as Malcolm Roberts reminded everybody, of course, the banks are owned by a large number of international investors who basically are holding the shares of most of the major banks, which basically means that they're four different shop fronts on the same ideological drivers. And I think that was a really great point that he made.
It was. And if they had their way, Martin, there would be four branches in Australia of this one bank. One branch would be called NAB, one would be called CBA, one would be called ANZ, and one would be called Westpac. And they would say, that would be enough. We don't need branches anyway, right? But that reflects the gulf between what the banks think and tragically, the government departments and regulators and how out of touch they are and what the actual public think, right? And that's why now, and that's the reality here, just to... as a political observation, the reason this inquiry is so powerful because it's tapped into what the public think.
Yep.
Right? And so I'm getting media requests all the time now from the media that once upon a time wasn't that interested in talking to us, but when they want to know about this issue, they're calling me to get background, to get leads, etc. But the real issue there is they want to cover it. Why do they want to cover it? Because they know that it strikes a nerve in the community. And if they know that, then the politicians will start to detect that. And the politicians on this particular committee have detected it, which is why this committee, they're scheduling more hearings. There were 20 witnesses at this hearing. It started at 8:15 in the morning. And went till 5:30 at night. I mean, it was full on all day. I've never been part of such a packed hearing in my life.
Yeah.
But that's how much these politicians want to capitalize on this issue. And it's I can tell you now, the politicians in the building who aren't part of the inquiry, including at the highest levels of the government, they are all watching this inquiry for the outcome. And because I went up to Canberra, the hearing was on Friday, and I went up there on the Tuesday with my colleague, Glenn Isherwood, who testified with me. We did meetings in Parliament for those few days leading up to the hearing. And we were meeting people who represented government ministers. And the message we got from them was, we are looking at this inquiry for implementable recommendations. That was the term one of them used. Implementable recommendations, because they know something's got to be done.
Yep.
Now, I had a bit of a flash of insight though while I was there, because it's, to me, the power of the banks in the building is like omnipresent. In fact, they were there while we were walking the corridor. So Anna Bly and the Australian Bankers, in fact, we were in the cafe at the same time as them. And politicians were telling us that they'd just turned up. And the individual banks had their lobbyists there, right? And so they're there to knock on politicians' doors and deliver a none too subtle message. One of our sources, and I can't name this person, but this person who was a very experienced member of, like, politician for many years, gave feedback to someone I know and said, you're not going to get, this person was predicting, we're not going to get a public bank, because that's what we're putting forward as the solution, right? Let's make these banks compete again. This person said, you're not going to get a public bank, because if anyone in the major party starts talking about a public bank, the banks will defund those parties. They'll call up and say, you're not getting any donations from us anymore. You know, in the 9 years of the Liberal government, the LNP government before Anthony Albanese won the election, the banks had given $14 million to the Labor Party. Sorry, $14 million to the Liberals and $9 million to the Labor Party.
Yep.
And the people who run these parties don't want to risk that kind of money. So what happens is, it's like the glass ceiling, but think of it more like a glass box. And inside that glass box, these politicians, they have permission to scream and wail and rant and rave. They can do that, but the glass box is the power of the banks. They can't break the glass. That's what they can't do. What we're doing, though, is assembling, you know, the barbarians at the gate, the masses outside, who are the victims of this power of the banks. And, I mean, you know, if you've really got all the time in the world, go back through Martin North's channel, Walk the World. You and I have been talking about this dynamic since 2018.
Yes.
Right? That if you can make politicians more conscious of the people who vote for them and the people who fund them, then we can start breaking that power, right? And one of the ways to do that is to present a popular idea. And that's what our public bank solution is. It's becoming an increasingly popular idea. And you know, I encourage people to watch the testimony that we gave on that, because ours was very focused on the public bank. We wanted to make sure we really got that message through to people. Emma Dawson from Per Capita, who was in the hearing before us, she talked about the public bank, the postal bank version of it, and Kiwi Bank. And they really, the politicians, you know, they got it presented to them very well. They know increasingly that this is a popular idea. In fact, one of the politicians said to us, so, you know, what do you say? He said, so how many councils have you got supporting you on this? And we thought it was an interesting question because we didn't know. He knew that we'd say, and of course, we've got a lot of councils have passed motions supporting us on this. And it shows me that's the sort of thing they're paying attention to, right? And so it's going to come down to a final battle, if you will, a political battle behind the scenes maybe, but in the building. Who are we going to serve here? The banks, just because they give us some money, or the public, who the banks treat so appallingly. And if we don't start serving them, we're going to be roasted alive by them. And I think that's the dynamic that's building. And to me, that's what came together on the day.
Yeah, I think that's right, Robbie. I mean, go back to the Financial Services Royal Commission, right? There was a lot of venting. There was a lot of anguish. There was a lot of hand-wringing. And then when the final report came out, silence, right? And nothing really changed. Why? Yep. Because the power of the banks was so strong and the influence from a political perspective was so strong that they were able to basically skirt around it and nothing much changed. There were a few minor tweaks, you know, the bear and everything else. But frankly, that was a very disappointing outcome. So the challenge now is to make sure that we don't go through the same cycle again, where of course all this is brought out into the open and people realize just how bad it is, and then the politicians sort of just look the other way and carry on. I think my sense is this time we've actually got a different dynamic in place, because one, the base of support in the country for change is stronger than it's ever been. And, you know, whether you've heard it from those out in, you know, the Northern Territories and up around there, or whether you listen to, you know, the agricultural sector, or whether you listen to people in regional towns or even closer into the cities, everybody is saying the same sort of issues, that it's not working for real businesses and real households. So this is a very broad-based issue that we've got. The second point is, interestingly, things like digital exclusion and you just can't get signals, you know, was absolutely there. Yep. But I thought it was also interesting that the SME conversation basically said that even if you've got digital services are working, there are times when you need that physical interaction, that face-to-face interaction too, firstly. And secondly, cash is a critical element, long-term element for the way that business is done. And, you know, somebody said, well, you know, keep an SME from cash? No chance. You know, they much prefer cash. Right. Why? Because they don't pay fees on it, whereas they do on digital transactions. So there's something different about the atmospherics this time. So I guess my question to you, because you're closest, you know, to what's going on there, what's your sense? Do you think the senators will ultimately be able to take this somewhere, or do you think we're going to actually get cut off at the pass again simply because of the power of the banks?
I think the senators want to. The question will be what power is brought to bear behind the scenes. But again, in a context where they have to weigh that up versus what the public want. And the thing to appreciate is that banks have been their own worst enemies. I mean, I cannot believe how out of touch they actually are, Mark. They're run by people who are so disconnected from the impact of their actions, and how they have, like, the you know, how many dictators in history have been overthrown just after that they proclaim themselves the most powerful of all time, right? This absolute hubris. I think Erich Honecker in East Germany in 1989, like middle of 1989, said something like the East Germany will last for 1,000 years, and a few months later the Berlin Wall came down, right? Or Nicolae Ceausescu, the Romanian dictator, ended up being shot against the wall. There was no one more, had more authority over his country than Ceausescu. But it's understanding that, hang on, if the public turn turn on your system, then you can think you have all the power in the world, but it can come crashing down. And the public will turn because of the things that you do to them, right? And so the behavior of these banks has been absolutely appalling. The latest one, I can't think off the top of my head when you and I last spoke, but in the last couple of weeks, just leading up to these hearings, a whistleblower from ANZ came out, and he's put the icing on the cake in terms of exposing the bad behavior of banks, and there is no justification for it. This is not a bank's, you know, having the right to try a different philosophy of management here. This man exposed deliberate, conscious deception on the government and on the public, because he became a whistleblower because he quit the bank. And the day he quit the bank was because a little old lady who was vision impaired was trying to use the ATM, as she was told by the tellers to do, because even though they're standing behind the counter, they're under orders not to serve her. They're the orders. They could do her banking for her in 1 minute, totally securely. Instead, they're under orders to send her to the ATM. And so she's trying at the ATM, doing as she was told, and she's vision impaired and she can't do it. And so he takes pity on her, which should not be the dynamic inside a business. Not pity. It's called service, you scum. This is service. It should be, this is our right as customers to have service. So he goes to her and takes her to the counter and serves her, does her banking for her, which is his job, which is what the role of a teller in the bank has been for centuries. And his supervisor gives him a dressing down, saying, if the customers want service, it will be on our terms. Because that supervisor, in turn, is under pressure from his management. And what the whistleblower exposes is that the ANZ management have told the tellers, you are not to serve customers. You must direct them to the ATM, or at least even the phone in the building, to do their banking, anything, so they don't come to the counter. Because if they don't come to the counter, they're not counted as a visit. And if they're not counted as a visit, we can turn around and say, no one is using our branches. Therefore, we need to shut it down. Yet that if I allow myself to let go, Martin, a stream of total filth would flow from my mouth when talking about the CEO of ANZ, Shayne Elliott, has fronted two inquiries this year in Parliament, and both times professed, hand on heart, that ANZ would love nothing more than have customers come into its banks so it can serve them. Lying, filthy scum, utter scum. Why is this man a CEO of a big four Australian bank and not in a jail? That's what I want to know. And he's not the only one. They're all the same. Some are smarter than others, some are nicer than others, but they're all running exactly the same operation. It is appalling that this is deliberate deception. This is deliberately exposing their customers to the most dangerous online scams. This little old lady who will not get served at an ANZ bank again will be told, you know, consult your grandkids to get you on a phone app, and if they're not there, ask some stranger and have all your money taken out of your account, and then it's not ANZ's problem. That's what they're like. And as mad as I am at them, Martin, it's the government's responsibility, because banking is an essential service. And when something is an essential service, That means the government is responsible for making sure it's provided. Doesn't mean the government has to provide it. It just means the government has to make sure it's happening. And instead, we've had successive governments that have sat on their hands and done nothing while our system has been pushed in this direction. And the only forum for it to be aired, how bad it has got, is this banking inquiry and the media that's being generated in the wake of that. And there's a lot of media now, right? Because that was a separate issue. And in fact, I have to comment on this. The ANZ whistleblower series in news.com.au, there's been four articles in a row because that the news.com.au business model is viewer driven, right? And so if they're getting eyeballs on the screen so they can sell their ads, they'll do follow-up articles. Two of the follow-up articles are about the responses of the viewers. And if the media can see that, then the politicians can see it as well, as I said. And so these five or six senators who have been participating in this inquiry, they're seeing that from the banks, right? And at a certain point, as I said in my testimony, the banks have dealt themselves out of this debate morally. This is one time for the first goddamn time that when they sit around that room, they should not at any stage consider what the banks want. Because if they do that, it's just going to repeat. And I will make sure there's an even bigger revolt in the public if they do that, if they go weak at the knees. One of the arguments we've got in our favour is this is now the third banking inquiry, like in this particular subject matter. And the other two previous inquiries choked. They didn't say bring back a public bank and force real competition on these banks. They said, let's try this form of partial re-regulation. Let's threaten full re-regulation. Didn't actually act on it, just made these kind of noises and nothing happened. And so these senators, they have a choice, don't they? Because they can sit, when they're deliberating about their final report, they can say, do we just do what senators usually do, which is come up with a final report that expresses nice words that sound popular, but just sits on a shelf and does nothing? Or do we change history here? Do we actually intervene on this situation? And I'll tell you one bit of news that came out this week that as far as I'm concerned, it sealed the deal. Because this is a crucial thing that you get, right, that banking is an essential service. Once that's designated as an essential service, this becomes a very significant issue. If it was just a casual thing, if it was a fashion, the government had no responsibility to it, but it's an essential service. In COVID, when governments were locking down businesses and only businesses that were essential services could remain open, guess who lobbied Martin to be included as essential services? The Australian Banking Association and the Big Four banks.
Yes.
And then they turn around and shut down, you know, 1,000 branches in 2 years around the country in the wake of that. Like you can't have it both ways, right? And you're not going to get the banks to try and you're not going to get them to reform their behavior and stop being so goddamn two-faced. That's not going to happen. It's up to the senators, the elected officials, our representatives to say, okay, no, that's it, mate. You've done your dash. You sit back there, we'll tell you what you're going to do. That's what's going to happen here. You understand? All right, shut up, wait for our report, then you will follow what we say in that report. And unless you treat them that way, this is going to continue. But I think we are building the level of expectation in the public that some of these senators are going to be game to start taking that tone.
Yeah, well, it will be interesting to see. But, you know, I think it's true to say, Robbie, that across the board, we've demonstrated that people power actually works. I mean, it's interesting that the digital bill, you know, the one that we were very concerned about, got pulled. All right. And
disinformation bill, yep.
Yeah, exactly right. So that's sort of off the table in the short term. And even the piece of legislation that was being pushed through with regard to the conduct of the Reserve Bank and the removal of the supervision from government is also now sort of parked Right. I would argue that both of those were actually very much in response to the massive amount of noise that was created from, you know, ordinary Australians and other academics and other people too, that said these are not good for us. So yeah, it shows you that, that, you know, the people power is really important. And I guess with regard to the current discussion about, you know, the digital channels and the future of banking and the, it's very much going to be down to whether the senators listen to ordinary Australians, ordinary businesses, because they have had it in spades now through the various hearings and, you know, through the various initiatives that we've been running as well. And by the way, it's also interesting that, of course, the regulators and the RBA and the Treasury are all over the place on this. They don't really know whether they're coming or going. And even APRA is still claiming that their statistics are actually fine, whereas Dale Webster, and kudos to Dale, who's been pushing this so hard for so long, really was able to give very compelling evidence that they really don't know what they're doing. They did admit, by the way, of course, that a reduction in hours is not in any way recorded in any of the analysis that they do, which I thought was a really interesting observation. I've been saying this for quite some time. You know, people have been shrinking the hours that banks' branches are open. And guess what? That's in no way recorded in any of the information that APRA is actually collecting. So once again, it shows you the stupidity of the statistics that then are trotted out by the regulators and trotted out by the RBA, that there's nothing to see here. Well, we know there's a lot to see here.
Well, one thing to consider is that when these senators sit behind the desks of these hearings, they would like nothing more than to hear what the regulators and the government departments like Treasury say and have confidence in that, and then think, well, they got it under control. There's not that much we can do. That the senators would love that. Like that if the default was, well, okay, we've raised the issue, but turns out once we've explored it, the people who are in charge know what they're doing, and then great, right? Okay, well we've had a look at it, we've said our piece, we can assure the public everything's under control. They'd love nothing more than that. That's not what they saw on Friday.
No.
Right. So here they've got, they know what the public thinks. They're getting that in no uncertain terms. They themselves are very angry at how the banks are behaving, right? And then when the representatives of the government, the regulators and the Treasury and RBA got to have their say on Friday, it was incredibly unimpressive, incredibly disappointing. And so if that default power hopes to influence these senators to stick with the status quo, I think they undermine their position immensely on the day. And that's great, because they are, it's a Potemkin village. When it comes to the banks, they have carte blanche, all right? And that's what we saw on display. And the regulators are saying, well, is it him or is it me? Is it whatever? One of the politicians said to me when I met him this week, he said, the problem for a long time in this building is no one wants to govern.
Yep.
And Jim Chalmers is an example of that. He's about to give away one of the most important powers a treasurer has, which is the power to overrule the RBA, because he doesn't want to be held accountable for interest rate rises. Now, you know, he could stop those interest rate rises. He sounds unhappy every time one happens. He has the power to stop them. Instead of stopping them and actually be accountable to the people, he's preferring to give up his power to do so. And in doing that, spit on the grave of John Curtin and Ben Chifley and the great, you know, Labor founding fathers who actually fought for that power. That's such is the modern state of Australian politics. So, yeah, I think the senators, you know, everything is going to be coming together for them really well. So this will be the best chance ever. But even the other thing, Martin, is, some people may get this reference, but my son and I are Tottenham fans in the English Premier League because I have a family connection to Tottenham. My second cousin used to be the captain of Tottenham. And now there's an Australian coaching Tottenham named Ange Postecoglou, and he's made a big impression over there. And I know you're another soccer guy, Martin, but anyway, there's an Australian coaching Tottenham. And what he's known for, right, is a style of play where they never, ever, ever back off and go defensive. They're just in the opposition space the whole time. And I love it because, to me, that's how we do politics, right? We, I don't care. To me, I don't care what the final report of this inquiry says. We're going to be in their face all the time anyway, and we're going to move on to the next one, right? And it's just it's a battle of constant engagement. And if you look back at our, I mean, we've had a big year, like I said, we've had a big, you know, 5 or 6 years, right? Martin, for the sake of the viewers, Martin and I got to know each other in late 2017, early 2018, when the government was passing the cash ban, the bail-in law to allow deposits to be stolen to prop up banks. And so we organised this massive assault on the body politic by the public complaining about this law. They still ran it through, but they ran it through kind of secretly so they could get it through. And then we started putting up bills into Parliament to keep this banking, this question of the power of banking, the illegitimate power of banking over us, the undemocratic power of banking over us front and centre. And we hit them with a Glass-Steagall bill that Bob Catter introduced into Parliament. And remember, we introduced that, got that other bill introduced to take away the power of the auditors, the big four auditing companies, right, that is just covering up the crimes of the banks, and that's what we said in 2019. And then we stopped the banks succeeding in getting the government to ban cash transactions over $10,000, and that campaign actually forced them to drop it. We came back to bail-in again. We had a big inquiry into bail-in, and all sorts of people came out of the woodwork and said, no, this bill does have to be clarified. And then the Christine Holgate issue came up because we got wind that her removal from Australia Post related to the fact that she wanted a postal bank. And I can absolutely confirm she did want a postal bank. And in fact, Martin, one of the first witnesses on Friday, Emma Dawson from Per Capita, she's the one who put me onto a postal bank because her organisation wrote this report on a post bank. And when I read it for the first time, it's the first time I considered that, hang on, that combination of banking postal services is an effective way to do this. And it was that got me thinking about this issue, so that when the Christine Holgate scandal happened and she was kicked out of Parliament, it made me ask questions that otherwise I might not have asked. And so that was good to see Emma in the hearing, because she, you know, back in 2020, thanks to her work, that got me on a certain path, and all these things came out of it. And then we've taken up ASIC and the regulators, right, in the meantime, et cetera. And it's always about this power of the financial system, right? It's under this neoliberal model, it's too much. It's not serving, the financial system no longer serves the economy. It feeds off the economy. And I was doing a radio interview today, and I compared, because, like, you know, once upon a time, you know, manufacturing in Australia was like 30% of GDP and financial services were like 4%. Because financial services serves the real economy. Now the biggest sector in the economy is financial services. It's the biggest sector. Manufacturing is down to 5%. Financial services is 11% or something, right? Can't remember. It's like having a restaurant where you've got enough room to sit 12 people and you've got 200 waiters. What sort of restaurant is that, right? They're just looking after themselves. That's that no one will tolerate. That's ridiculous. Well, that's the model we've got. And this is the number one problem in Australia. There's lots of problems in Australia, but this kind, when this power is so blatant, so corrupt, and so entrenched, then, and if they can get away with it, then anything, you know, all bad actors will get away with what they're getting away with. The government will be impotent on all fronts, and that's what we've got to change, this big one, right? And that's what's happened over the last 5 or 6 years. We've just kept coming at them. And so in May, when they come down with this report, I am expecting good stuff in there. I absolutely am. And so, but it's not binding on the government, but we know the government, as I said, the government is looking for this inquiry's outcomes to see what they can implement, right? But whatever they do, we're going to keep coming at them. Keep coming at them, because we have to change this system. There is nothing legitimate about it. It's destroying the nation as long as it's in place, the more we destroy, we become.
Yeah, and just a slightly broader canvas here, you know, the home price problem is a function also of the banking system not being fit for purpose, right? One of the reasons why we've got such high house prices is because, of course, lending is now more and more orientated towards mortgages, because the ratios for risk are actually set in a way that makes home lending much, much more effective from a cost perspective for the banks. And of course, the banks have blown up the housing market as they've extended their lending and everything else. So you could actually argue, I think, Robbie, that one of the main reasons why the Australian economy is so sick is simply because of the way that the banking system has been working. It's a parasite on the broader economy. It's a parasite on businesses and households. And unfortunately, because, as we said at the start of the show, the banking system is so powerful in its lobbying and puts so much money into the political system, it feels that it has a divine right to do just what it pleases to please many of its investors without actually thinking about where it goes. So this is a really, really critical issue. And just to underscore, you know, the public bank idea would facilitate a different way of running an economy that actually means that there is actually funding available for businesses who need to actually, do the things that they need to do. It isn't just a change of name. It's a change of philosophy.
I love that term divine right, Martin, because the last king of England to espouse the divine right. I mean, James I was the most explicit about the divine right of kings and very eloquent about it, you know, because it was his power he was talking about. Mm-hmm. Of course, he was God on earth. But then his son, Charles I, was also in the same mold, and they believed in the divine right of kings. And look what happened to Charles. He's the one who lost his head. And Oliver Cromwell and the English Civil War. And that's what happens when you provoke that kind of reality. If that's the attitude you're going to take, and you've nailed it. That's exactly what the banks are like. They're acting like they've got a divine right, and they're provoking the rebellion, right? So that's where my optimism is coming from. At the end of the day, we've got people in the building that are starting to see it. We've got more people in the building that are capable of seeing it. And I think just the combination of the principle of banking, you know, being not fit for purpose, the systemic problems in the economy, and then the practical stuff, which is also very big in our society, is just the idea that, you know, idiot bankers say we can go cashless when anyone with a brain in their head in Australia knows we cannot go cashless, right? And you know, you're making yourselves vulnerable to Optus outages. And I saw something on Twitter today. In fact, Twitter's getting worse. I should probably get off it. But nevertheless, there's a big coronal mass ejection thing forming in the sun at the moment. That someone compared it to the Eye of Sauron. I think it was legit. I don't know. It might have been a fake. But anyway, you know, the flares that come out from the sun, they can knock out your systems for a while, right? And the only thing that you can use to transact in all circumstances in cash is cash, especially in a country like Australia. And so that practical stuff has really become a big issue. And all of them brought together is something that is very persuasive for the kind of outcome that we need. And then what we're trying to do is remind them of their own history, because we had 100 years of or more of public banking in Australia. They didn't get rid of the Commonwealth Bank because it wasn't working. They got rid of it because it was working. And in fact, if you look at the testimony that Glenn Isherwood and I were able to deliver, we had the benefit of having read through the Campbell Report from 1982. And we're in a position now that this was the report that recommended privatisation of all banks, right? And it was done by 1996. It had been implemented. And now we're in a position a quarter of a century later to take stock and say, well, what's the outcome? Do we have a better banking system now than we did in 1996? And unless you're dishonest, the answer clearly is no. It is a far worse banking system. It's a system where the arrogance of Shane Elliott and the Ross McEwans of this world from NAB is on display. They don't care. They make, as I said, they make more money out of their customers, but they don't want to serve their customers. Right, that is not a better banking system. And so we can then say, okay, go back to where the fork in the road, and let's take the other way. Let's take sticking with public banks, improve the public banks, have a proper national bank for investment. Let's get investment. Let's have less investment in housing in the capital cities, and more investment in infrastructure and housing in the regions so that population growth in Australia can be spread out across the whole country, not concentrated in two or three big cities. And if it's spread out across the country and it's industry driven, you won't even notice it as a challenge. The country towns that are withering and dying on the vine will be grateful for the extra people that are coming to live there, but they need the infrastructure, they need the investment. That's what you can do with the National Bank. You can provide that kind of investment. And once the investment flows and the results are there and the pie starts to grow, watch those parasitical bastards running the private banks rush back in there.
Yep.
They'll want to be part of the action. They will never in a million years lead the development of Australia for the greater good, because that's not their remit. Their remit is maximizing profits for shareholders. But if the public bank does that, they will want to be part of the action. Alexander Hamilton had that argument with the public banks, with the private banks in America in the 1790s. He wrote a report for Congress on it. It's in the report. That was he debated that way back then. That's what we can achieve, but it's only people acting for the public good. That's what we're appealing to with these members of Parliament who are going to be responsible for this final report. So just to recap a couple of things, Martin, just for the where I leave, because we're pretty close to Christmas. I don't know if we'll talk again before Christmas. We will if something important breaks, but I will say this, just a couple of things to flag for people. This inquiry goes till May, like I said, so keep following it and understand it's a bigger issue than just the practicalities of branch services. This goes to the nature of banking. It's one facet, but it's opened up a bigger door there. So please follow that closely. And the other thing is the Reserve Bank, on Thursday, Jim Chalmers, as you alluded to earlier, introduces Reserve Bank Review Bill. It's called Treasury Laws Amendment Reserve Bank Reforms Bill 2023. Now, that bill has been deferred, and that was at there was a Senate selection of bills committee last week that looked at the bill and they've deferred it for consideration. And that committee will meet again on Wednesday night this week and either refer the bill to a committee or defer it again. And there's a strong reason to believe they'll defer it again, because to refer a bill to a committee just this close before Christmas means the committee will run over Christmas, and that's pretty impractical. So they'll probably defer it again until February. Now, I might be wrong. We'll update you if I am, but they'll probably defer it again until February, in which case then it'll be referred to a committee and we'll have a couple of months of a committee process. But this is the bill that is this battle is the next front in this fight, because we cannot allow the government to give up this power, which is actually its responsibility to have final say over the financial system. We cannot allow it. Now, Peter Martin, the ABC economics writer, has actually come out in the on ABC and in The Conversation opposing, pointing out the history of this, reflecting a lot of the work we've put out there and opposing this bill. We've got people like Paul Keating, Bernie Fraser, people who were involved in great battles, you know, in the 80s and whatever. They've all said, look, the principle of democracy is very important. You cannot give up the power of democracy to the bureaucrats. You just can't, right? So there's voices being raised, but it's going to come down to the public. It's going to come down to people who've been part of these campaigns for the last few years, saddling up again and taking this on. So we'll update you when there is an inquiry and you can make submissions, etc. But that's the next one to look at. And that fight will probably begin really in earnest in February. But if it's before that, we'll let people know.
Absolutely. And once again, I think it shows that, you know, the power of the people. And it's just worth more generally saying to people who've been watching these shows and watching what we've been talking about and then have picked up the phone, have sent those emails, you know, made submissions, kudos to all of you. You have made a difference. You've actually been able to help us move this forward. And I think it underscores the importance of participation in the democratic process, right? So don't leave it to other people. Don't leave it to them that know, you know, in Parliament or the regulators. They are actually not working in the benefit to the benefit of many ordinary people. But we have a mechanism, and I know that there are a number of people who said, oh, it's not worth it, you know, we never get anything done. The point is, if you don't actually engage, if you don't actually make your views known, nothing will ever change. But we've been able to actually get significant momentum thanks to individuals taking the time and the trouble to actually engage. And that's a really, really important object lesson, isn't it?
Yep. No, it all comes down to that. That's our power. If you're not engaged, you're vacating the field to the vested interests, and they will run the show. But when I sit down, when members of parliament, you know, agree to meet with me, and they sit down, they're pretty aware that there's effectively an army of people behind me who are prepared to activate and call them and email them and confront them, and you know, even publicly in the street, and say, you know, what are you doing about this? What are you doing about that? And that makes these people, it confronts them with what the public want, and then you get to even up the playing field here. And I think we're well on the way to evening up the playing field. If not winning every battle, certainly evening up the playing field, because beforehand, you know, when you've got all these people that have given up on the system and going, no, it's not going to change, well, that's a self-fulfilling prophecy. So we've had a lot of success there, Martin, and we keep, I'll just say to the people, don't get sick of these inquiries. Like they're always really interesting. All sorts of important stuff comes out of them. And yeah, some, you know, these politicians, they can be as frustrating as teenagers. and that's life, right? But this is our lives that we're fighting for, right? So you can't give up. And it's important to take the time, like now, like we're doing now, look back over the span of the last year, 5 years and whatever, and see the progress over that longer span. And we just have to keep at it.
Absolutely. Well, we'll probably have a live show sometime in January when we can talk about the plans for next year, because there are things that we need to engage around as well. But no, I think we can definitely say that momentum is building. You know, the story is still being written, and it's not yet completely certain. But certainly the momentum is definitely in our favor. So, Robbie, I want to say thank you to you and all of your team for leading a lot of the charge. Also to Dale, because without Dale's work, and Dale and I published the original letter that sort of got the thing off, and, you know, everybody else sort of came in behind. So kudos to Dale there as well. And it's worth finally saying, this is because it's all about making sure that the political system and the banking system works to support communities, households, and businesses, which is what they should be doing. You know, they should be enabling things to happen, not, frankly, messing and basically cutting us off at the knees, which, of course, is a lot of what seems to happen at the moment. So this is a critical ongoing fight, but we can certainly say this has been a good year. Hopefully next year will be even better.
Yep. Don't know how to top. We'll top it next year yet, but we'll work on it.
All right. Thanks, Robbie. Talk to you again soon. Have a good Christmas.
Thanks, mate. You too, mate. See ya.